Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Well, minutes after criticizing Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys for going for it on a fourth down and short from their own 34, Bucky, they did it again at midfield, but this time got the first down on a quarterback sneak from Andy Dalton. You criticized the first play call, which was a pass that they did not complete, turning the ball over to Washington. This, I would guess, was more to your liking for Dallas as their drive stays alive.
I mean, we're talking about inches, so yes, the quarterback sneak should always be in play. If you can't get inches on a quarterback sneak, like you don't deserve to win. So yes, it was a better play call for my taste.
Yeah, and while it wasn't a handoff, they did just run the ball and dove forward, got the first down, and now a pass interference call. We'll have the Cowboys knocking on the door. They're down 17-10, as you heard Dave say, but right now they're at the Washington 20-yard line. They've got a couple of timeouts as well at their disposal with those 43 seconds left. Earlier this week on Fox Sports Radio, by the way, first of all, thank you very much for joining us on this Thanksgiving Day. For those of you that may be hearing RJ Bell and Jonas Knox on Straight Out of Vegas, you get me and Bucky for an extra hour and expanded edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show. But earlier this week on Fox Sports Radio, Bucky, we started a countdown on the network of the top 20 athletes of the last 20 years. In part, it's to honor our 20-year anniversary that we have for Fox Sports Radio and the 20 years of existence. So there was a master list of 60 athletes that we sent out to various employees of Fox Sports Radio, asking them for their ballots on who they thought were the top 20 athletes, added up all of the totals, and now we are unveiling our list over the next few weeks or so. And so it started on Tuesday night, where we ended up unveiling numbers 20 through 16. So there are going to be 40 athletes on this master list of 60 that aren't going to be mentioned in this list of 20. But we went everywhere and anywhere when it came to athletes, whether it be from the National Football League, the NBA, Summer Olympians, Winter Olympians, boxers, MMA fighters, the whole gamut. We had everything covered. But on this master list, we also had 10 NFL players that were actually a part of the ballots. And I want to get your thoughts on these guys, but I do want to quick tell the listener the 20 through 16 athletes. Sidney Crosby of the Pittsburgh Penguins came in 20th, Barry Bonds 19th, Jimmy Johnson, the NASCAR driver, 18th, Mariano Rivera came in 17th, and then Steph Curry came in 16th. So if I give you these 10 players, Bucky, I don't want you to break down every single one of them, but tell me the names that in your mind would stand head and shoulders above these athletes and maybe other athletes in the sports as well when I give you these names. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, LaDainian Tomlinson, Adrian Peterson, Ray Lewis, and Ed Reed. So when we're talking about all sports, who are the NFL players of that list that end up standing out to you that could have a place in these rankings that you believe?
Randy Moss, because I think when we're talking about players on the list, they have to be transcendent talents. They have to be generational guys, guys that we know we're going to talk about years and years and years and years down the line. So Randy Moss stands out to me. Ed Reed would stand out to me. Peyton Manning would stand out to me.
But no Brady or Brees yet in this?
Nah. I think the difference is, like, Brady could be in the mix. Now, I wouldn't put Brees in the mix, only because, like, the Manning thing is the number of MVPs, the wins. Brady would be there, obviously, as a six-time Super Bowl winner, the MVPs. Brees is a great stat stuffer, but I can't put him in the same – I can't put him in the same category as Brady and Manning because the wins don't add up. Like, it doesn't match up. The resumes don't match up just from that standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at the numbers and how they were accumulated, and it, fair or unfair, it's just how it's looked at. I think Drew Brees' numbers are, system is not the right word, but it's a big, it's a part of the system. Like Peyton Manning, I guess, was his system, if you will. Like that's how I would look at it. But you also have to take, as you mentioned, Manning being the MVP does have the two Super Bowls. You know, where Breeze does have the numbers, but there is just the one Super Bowl win and the one Super Bowl appearance. And Aaron Rodgers, when you look at even what Rodgers has done, I think could be part of the equation as well when you're talking about quarterbacks, because there are some that feel that Rodgers has played the position at times better than anybody who has played it before. Is there an argument that maybe Aaron Rodgers should have been moved up in this list as a potential top 20 candidate?
Yeah, no, I think Aaron Rodgers should certainly be in the mix. And I think the one thing that we have to pay attention to when it comes to Drew Brees in comparison to Manning and Brady, Drew Brees had that segment where they went 7-9 three straight years, 2014, mm-hmm. 15, and 16. We didn't necessarily see those kinds of drop-offs from Tom Brady nor Peyton Manning, even at their lowest moments.
Very good point. Even, I mean, yeah, that's that when you just taking wins and keeping yourself competitive, that's a point. Why is Moss different than T.O.? Like you, I think we had Randy Moss on this list, but you didn't mention T.O.
Maybe because like just in terms of remembering who you talked about, I think they should be the same. And I look, when Randy Moss was a first ballot Hall of Famer, I felt like T.O. should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. If you go back and look at their numbers and their impact, it should be identical. The touchdowns are comparable. The yards are comparable. If you look at the way that they impacted the game, I think it's comparable. For whatever reason, T.O. isn't viewed in the same light as Randy Moss, but he should be because he was a dominant player. He was a dominant player for multiple teams. You look at his numbers, even in his final years, he was still a high-end player. I think he should be treated with that, but I think because we read the list and I couldn't remember all the names,
that's fine.
T.O. You know, wasn't included, but he should be right there. Wherever Randy Moss is, T.O. should be right there. If not, surely they're behind.
But I also saw a tweet today marking the 22-year anniversary of Randy Moss's emergence into the National Football League, because it really was the Thanksgiving Day game against Dallas. Like that was the game that I think Randy Moss officially arrived in the National Football League. And just to see the highlights, to see the great thing about that game 22 years ago were not the passes that Randall Cunningham threw up to him that he caught. It was the third touchdown down the sideline. Remember, it was just a bit of a, you know, button hook sort of thing. Jukes the defender and then blazes past the other defenders and the safety coming over. And so while you look at Moss, and maybe it's just like, oh, Randy Moss, jump ball, throw it up to him, he'll get it. But it was that third touchdown that he had in Dallas 22 years ago in 1998 that I think was really the one where, when you want to talk about freak, like it looks like the guys are going in at three-quarter speed, the Cowboy defenders, as he runs down the sidelines. Like, it appears that they have an angle on him, and then all of a sudden they don't anymore, and he's in the end zone. It truly is one of the amazing games, especially on that stage, because the Thanksgiving Day games are the most watched regular season games in the NFL throughout the season. To see him arrive like he did was truly something special.
Unique player. And it is different because we did get so conditioned in seeing him with, you know, you got mossed and jump balls and those things, but he was much more than just that. I would say he's one of the best athletes that I've ever seen play the position. I would say that his ability to get from 0 to 60 was unique. The fact that he was a taller receiver, and you normally don't see tall receivers have that kind of speed, is different. And when you get to know him and people that have coached him and played with him, they talk about his IQ and how smart he was and how he's a savant on the perimeter. Unique, very unique in what he was able to do. And I would say T.O. was a little different, a powerful, dominant, physical player. People marvel over D.K. Metcalf. And I would tell you, having lined up and played against T.O., there's nothing like dealing with that force of nature that he was out on the perimeter.
Really?
So, I mean,
what was it
unbelievable
like?
Strength and power and those things, and doesn't really underappreciated his greatness is because of all the other stuff that kind of comes along with it. People talk about him, whether he's a good teammate or a bad teammate, and all of the fallouts that may have happened with him and some of the quarterbacks. But you can't deny his impact. And just a different kind of player than Randy Moss, but just as impactful on the field.
I'll wrap up with this, because you did mention when I named the 10 guys that were on the ballot of 60, and we don't know where how many NFL guys, but in our first unveiling, there were no NFL players in the 20 through 16 rankings. You did mention Ed Reed, and there weren't a lot of defensive guys of the NFL guys to make the list, just two of them. They both were Ravens, and Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. But why did Ed Reed stand out to you?
Turnovers. His ability to get turnovers. His ability to just understand where the ball is going, put himself in a position to make plays on it. And then when he made plays on it, he could take it to the house. High IQ player, one of the more intriguing prospects that I ever evaluated when he was coming out of Miami, and just how he had a knack for the ball. And then to see that play out the way that it played out for him in Baltimore, being put in a system where they allowed him to tap into his anticipation and his instincts and to play on his hunches. That came from film study. So he had ability to gamble and guess right, but he wasn't reckless. That's what I remember about him.
Ed Reed, one of the best. His first name is spelt in his last name. How often can you have that? Ed Reed, one of our 10 NFL players that made our list of 60. Will he make it into the top 20? You'll have to find out in our next installment. Tuesday night during the Odd Couple, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. We reveal 15 through 11. And just an update, all right, just an update from Arlington. The Kane Brown concert is underway, but it was recorded earlier. So there are no fans. There's no game. They recorded a concert earlier that they are airing right now, and that's how they were doing the Salvation Army concert that they traditionally do at halftime of Cowboys games. So that is your answer to how the halftime performance is going on. There is one. It is Kane Brown. It happened earlier, but they are re-airing it right now. Get Bucky on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Hey, it's Thanksgiving traditions.
I just have a question about this. If I'm Kane Brown and I'm doing a concert and there's no one in the building, am I excited about that?
The check clears. I'll say that much. that's what I'm doing. You know,
do I spend a lot of time worrying about my wardrobe if I know that no one is in the stands?
They're going to see on TV. You know, when you're doing those interviews, whether it be with the Jaguars or Cowboys or whoever, if you're on NFL Network, you're not gonna not dress up. You're not gonna show up in a full, you know, sweatpants, right?
Okay, still bring the A game. Empty stadium.
Still got to bring your A game, that's for sure. And I'm sure Kane's probably taking I don't know for sure what they get paid. I'm sure there's a donation made as well, but when the check clears, that's usually good enough for me. Get Bucky on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Cowboys added a field goal at the end, but it's Washington who leads it at halftime, 17-13. We don't know who's going to win the NFC East this year. We actually may have a better idea of who can win it next year. We'll talk about that next year on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
That it is, a Thanksgiving Day edition. I'm Dan Beyer. He's Bucky Brooks. So if I were to introduce you, Bucky, what order do you like? Do you like five-year NFL vet, former NFL scout, NFL Network, Move the Sticks podcast? What is the rankings of the ways that I could identify you as we come back to programming?
Man, that's a tough one.
Do you like five-year NFL vet, or are you like now you got your scouting game on? You got NFL draft expert.
I mean, I don't know. It all kind of runs together, right? It's all it just says that I'm old because I've got a bunch of different jobs. Like that's what it signifies. A lot of different jobs. So I don't know. How about overall good guy?
Overall good guy, Bucky Brooks, with me, Dan Beyer here, sitting in for Doug Gottlieb. I will say this, and I thought it actually, we didn't talk about it at the time, but it does show you another look inside an athlete's mind. Was earlier in this show, and if you missed it, that's all right. We're glad that you're with us now. We had Brandon Weeden, former NFL quarterback, Oklahoma State product, on. And, you know, Bucky had scouted Brandon, and I was able to bring up some of the critiques, the scouting reports that Bucky had on Brandon. And what was most surprising, Bucky, was that Brandon, I mean, obviously he knows who you are, but he remembered your scout on him and remembered the things that you said. And Brandon's been out of the game for a little while, but he still remembers those. And I think it gives you thoughts and more of an inside look to an athlete than people would remember of. Not only do you remember what they say about you, they remember who said it. And it's not necessarily all bad, because he said that you were a guy that gave him a fair shake and had a good report on him. I thought that was very interesting from Brandon Weeden earlier today.
Well, it is interesting, because they remember you two ways, right? Either you said something really good about them, or you said something bad. And if you said something bad, then you're one of the haters. And they can't wait to address the haters. And so I get it, having done it, because you look for anything, any little edge, any little comment where you felt like you've been disrespected. So I do appreciate that way back in the day, I wrote something positive and said something positive about him, so he wasn't a little testy with us.
By the way, when I looked at stuff, and there were a bunch of different articles, there wasn't a lot of negative that you had about Brandon Weeden. Obviously, you got to give the pluses and minuses of a player. It's like a cooking show. Like, I imagine that when you have these amazing chefs on, like last night up late watching guys' grocery games, and they had like one of the all-star appearances. So you had, you know, like these top chefs, and then their peers are grading their food, but you just can't say, oh my gosh, this turkey is awesome, this stuffing is amazing, everything is great. You have to say, like, you probably could have cooked the Brussels sprouts a little bit more. Like, you have to say something like that. Or just like any show that you're trying to buy a home when you have three different homes. You can't love everything about it in home number one. You got to be like, well, I don't know if that bathroom's big enough. You got to have that. You got to. It's kind of the role of a scout as well. You have to have the pluses and minuses. Is that fair enough?
Pluses and minuses.
Yeah, you do. You can't just be like, this guy has no weaknesses. That's one of the job interview jokes that I always have. When they ask you, what's your biggest weakness? Here's your go-to answer. You know what you say? Too many strengths. That's how you turn it around on them. Too many strengths when they ask you what your weaknesses are.
Too many?
Yeah, too many strengths.
That could come off a little bad, but I did it though.
I'm good at too many things. It's one of my weaknesses. Yeah. You know, I have too many strengths.
I just wanted to be on the other end of that, like how I would take that. If you're like, you know, I have so many strengths that I don't have any. Because as a scout, those are the things that we do, Dan, right? So we sit down with a player and we say, hey, okay, what's your best game? What's your good game, bad game? If you were to look at yourself and scout yourself, what would you say that you do really well, and what would be some of the things that you need to work on? And then when you get to the work on part, they'd be like,
they're quiet, huh?
Yes. Yes. They don't have much. So you have to find something to be critical. Like, you know, I can get a little better at this. You know, I'm trying anything.
Yeah. Well, it's a catch-22 though. You don't want to, like, if and they probably know that you know about their game, so they don't want to bring up something that maybe you don't want to know, but they also don't want to seem like they're lackadaisical. I think the way that you could do it is you could say something like, I'm really trying to improve on getting off the line of scrimmage. Could that be like a way of saying it, where it's maybe you're not a strength, but you're working on it? That would be the way that I would try to go about it, to say it, so you're not trying to bring yourself down and bring attention to maybe a weaker part of your game. Would that be fair?
I mean, that is fair. That is fair. I have advised people in that, like, don't give, like, the weakness that is really out there. Like, try and make them find that. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you can give them something that maybe I need to work
on
a little bit. But don't take them right to the water in terms of what you don't do well. Like, yeah, you know, I just don't catch the ball really.
Yeah.
My hand-eye coordination is bad. Like,
a lot of guys are faster than me. I'm pretty slow. And my arthritic knee acts up every now and then. Those are the things that are holding me back. Oh, the arthritic knee that is the NFC East. That's what we're going to move on to. I don't like to call it the NFC Least, Bucky, either. I call it the NFC deceased because it is a dead division. That thing is over. Don't say NFC least. Say NFC deceased. Even if you still think that Washington could take care of Tampa Bay this year. I mean, it has been an absolute mess in that division, and we're seeing it play out on Thanksgiving Day today with Washington leading the Cowboys at halftime.
It's not how you start. It's how you finish. A good playoff performance can erase all of this conversation that we're having. All it takes is to win one playoff game, and there we go. Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have been so critical on the NFC East.
Well, a one-game thing. You mentioned the Seahawks in the beast mode quake. Truly, in that game, which was a great game and was crazy, there was no way the Seahawks were going to the Super Bowl that season. It was great to see. It was great to see to knock off the Saints, who ended up. I think it was after the Super Bowl season that they had. So you end up beating them, and it was a great win, and it's one of the great plays in Seahawks history. Maybe even the greatest play in Seahawks history. There's the beast quake was something else, but it also, as I mentioned, when they won the division, like in a span of 2 weeks, they went from like a top 10 pick all the way down to like 23 because of how things played out. So when you win the NFC East, you are going to end up dropping in the draft, and while a bunch of the other teams are going to be picking in the top 10. So now my question to you is not necessarily how this is going to play out this season, because I truly don't think that any of these teams, whoever wins the division, will do any damage. But how does it set you up for 2021? If you were to take these four teams next season, how would you rank the teams and how you think they're going to play out in 2021? Because that's what I think is actually most important and most intriguing, because I think you have all of these teams in different spots when it comes to 2021. They're all in the same spot right now, 3 wins. But when it comes to next year, I think it's a whole different ballgame. So how would you look at the NFC East as it sets up in 2021?
You know, it's so critical because for the Dallas Cowboys, a lot of it depends on how Dak Prescott comes back and what they do, whether they sign him on a franchise tag, do they extend him, what that looks like. For the Philadelphia Eagles, man, I'm probably the least optimistic about them just because of the quarterback situation and all of the changes and the cap situation. It's not ideal. The Giants, I'm hopeful because of Joe Judge and some of the things that they're doing. They appear to like and respond to his style. His tough love coaching style appears to be working for them. But we'll see, because Saquon Barkley has to come back and some of that other stuff. And then with the Washington football team, they just need to continue to add to this offense, because defensively they're almost at the point where they're good to go. It is just, can they add – ooh, that's a fumble. Can they add pieces to the offense?
Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys, got the football to start the second half of this game. It ruled that Zeke was down, but it looks like Zeke fumbled the ball, and it looked to be a clear recovery by Washington. So that would put Washington in Cowboys territory early in the second half already with a 4-point lead. And, yeah, it seems to be a Jonathan Allen – ended up coming up with a football, and I think Washington's going to get the football. So not the ideal way. The line judge ended up ruling that his elbow was down, but that was not the case. So I think we're going to have an overturned call here in Dallas, so Washington is likely to get the football. I agree with you about Philadelphia, because we don't know what they are now, and as you said with Carson Wentz's situation, it's also seemingly a pretty old football team. I mean, with the main names that we know about, I know they drafted Jalen Reagor in the first round this past season, but I mean, you know, they're still trying to count on Alshon Jeffrey. They're still trying to count on Zach Ertz. And as you said, with their contract situation with Carson Wentz and others as well, there's going to be money owed. And there's not going to be a lot to do. So I actually would put Philadelphia near the bottom of that list. I'm curious. I think that Washington probably is the team that is set to be on top if they can just figure out who their quarterback is going to be. And we've done shows before, Bucky, and I've said I would just draft offensive and defensive linemen in every draft. That's all I would draft and figure it out.
That's all you draft?
Yeah, because I think that's the way that you win. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for a Super Bowl to tell me otherwise. Like, even Even if you want to say maybe the Chiefs weren't built like that, I would still point to the addition of Frank Clark, the emergence of Chris Jones on the defensive side of things. They had still had a pretty solid offensive line. I'd look at the 49ers from last year and what their defensive front did. And I think if you would go back, Rams with Aaron Donald, I think that is a constant. The Eagles in, you know, Super Bowl 52 with their offensive line, like that's what gets you there, and that's what gets it done. But you were talking earlier, you tweeted earlier as well about Washington's defensive front. You've got that shored up for the next couple of years. Then you add some certain pieces. Antonio Gibson seems to be quite the player in the running back position, so he's just in his rookie season. There just seems to be a lot more positivity with Washington that you could put, you know, you put Washington on top and you put maybe Philadelphia in the bottom, because who knows what's going to happen with Dallas? Who knows when Dak's going to come back? Who knows what's going to happen, you know, with the Giants, who were decent against the run? And maybe Daniel Jones turns the corner. I'd probably put Dallas 2 and the Giants 3, but I think that Washington's the team that you look to when you're looking ahead of the team doing damage. And while I don't think that they could do damage in this year's postseason, I do think that going forward with Ron Rivera there and the ability to just change the complete identity of that franchise, the bright things are ahead for football fans in D.C.
Yeah, look, one of the things that you have to be when you're looking at a team that can make a quick turnaround and can quickly emerge as a championship contender, you have to look at the lines, offensive line, defensive line, because it's a bigger impact. When I look at the Washington football team, their defensive line, all of those first rounders make a difference. Ryan Kerrigan can be a free agent, so we don't know if he's coming back. But Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne, that is the foundation of a defensive house that could really spark them. They need more speed at cornerback. They have to continue to get better. Kendall Fuller is solid. Darby has had his issues. We've seen that today. Offensively, Terry McLaurin has been solid. They need to find another weapon in the passing game, and actually two weapons, I would say. Find a legitimate tight end and another playmaker on the outside. And you look like you have a team that can certainly do it. Gibson has been better than I can even imagine at running back, because he was a guy that was a wide receiver in college that has transitioned into being a running back. He's been outstanding. The news that came out today about Alex Smith and the Washington football team potentially wanting him back. He's not a great player right now coming off the leg, but you can see he's been very efficient. He takes care of the ball. He doesn't turn it over. And when you have a team that plays really good defense, if your quarterback doesn't turn it over, it gives you a chance to win a ton of games.
Washington got the football on that Ezekiel Elliott fumble and now driving down near the Dallas 20-yard line at about the 22-yard line. He is Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer. We put on our cowboy boots next as we analyze the National Football League and who really has a chance at making it the Super Bowl 55. We'll tell you after David Gascon gives us the latest of what's happening on this Thanksgiving Day.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
This is the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio, an extended version. I'm Dan Beyer. He's Bucky Brooks as we are sitting in for Doug Gottlieb. The nice guy, Bucky Brooks, as we will now know him as the good guy, Bucky Brooks. Vincent Close is the executive producer, and the technical producer is John Ramos. And Bucky, when we get together on Thanksgiving, which I think was the last time we did a show together, was Thanksgiving of 2019, you know what we always like to do at this point? Yes, another edition of Brooks and Dunn. The great part about this was Bucky didn't realize that the band's name was Brooks and Dunn. So when we ask if this team is done or not, that's where the whole play on words. So now you know, Boots, Scoot, and Boogie and Brooks and Dunn. Bucky, this is all you got to tell me. When I bring up these teams, and I've got a couple of handfuls of NFL teams, do these teams have a legitimate shot at making it to Super Bowl 55? A decent to legitimate chance at doing some damage and getting to Tampa? That's what I want to know. You're not going to hear the Steelers. You're not going to hear the Chiefs. You're not going to hear the Seahawks or Saints or Packers, because we expect them that they should have a chance. We're going to go with the others, all right? All you got to tell me is if they're done or not, okay, Bucky?
All right, here we go.
All right, let's start. Buffalo Bills, so they have a chance at Super Bowl 55.
Yes, they have a chance. Yes.
All right. What about the team that's chasing them in the AFC East, the Miami Dolphins?
Done.
Oh, they're done.
They're done. They can't make up their mind who their quarterback is. First is Tua, then it's, yeah, they're done.
By the way, quick thoughts on that. Like, to me, last weekend, the move to Fitzpatrick just completely revealed their cards of the plan for Tua. Like, they didn't think they were going to be this good. So when you pull Tua for competitive reasons, really tells me that you're really trying to win football games because you're in the playoff hunt, which then just lends, you know, back to the fact of they were going to make the change at the bye week, and their bye week just got moved up, right? I mean, that's
– I mean, there
can't be more revealing than that.
I mean, that's a reasonable suggestion, because I do think it was moved up because of the bye. But what I can't understand is this is the first game that Tua has had, like, severe struggles. To take him out, to put Ryan Fitzpatrick in, but then after the game to say that, hey, it's Tua's job, we're just taking him out, it's just different. Now, I'm not opposed to taking people out in games at other positions. It's just uncommon to see that at quarterback. But if that is how Brian Flores is going to run the quarterback room, if that's how he's going to treat the quarterback like a regular position player, then it's different, but it's something that we can get used to.
All right, what about the Baltimore Ravens, who right now could be on the outside looking in of a playoff spot?
Done.
They are done. Done.
Stick a fork in them. They're done.
Cleveland, they're done
because of not Lamar Jackson and all of that stuff. They're done because their offensive line isn't good enough right now. The offensive line doesn't dominate the way that they did in, what, three of the last four games. They've been outrushed by their opponent. That is something that should never happen to a team that we know what they're built for or what they're known for is running the ball. The fact that teams are outrunning them is problematic. Lamar Jackson hasn't played at the level that he played at last year. Greg Roman appears to not understand what the identity of the team is. And defensively, they've been up or down. So, yeah, they're done. Put door to them.
You know what I need? I need some seconds from some Brooks and Dunn. I need another serving because we got a couple of more teams. Yeah, let's crank it up. Give me some more turkey. Give me some more stuffing. Give me some more pie. All right. Browns, Cleveland Browns. Are they done or not?
Super Bowl, done.
Yeah,
playoffs, Super Bowl. Yes.
Okay, that's what we care about is the OSBLV, Super Bowl 55. So the Browns are done. What about the Indianapolis Colts?
Oh, no, I'm bullish on them.
Yeah, I am too.
They have a chance.
Yeah, I think they have an opportunity. Tennessee Titans battling the Colts in that AFC South.
I would say they're done.
Oh, really?
I would say they're done. For the Super Bowl, they're done.
Oh, they were a game away last year. What about the
last year?
What about the Las Vegas Raiders?
Oh, not quite yet. They're done. Not yet.
So my judgment here is you've got the Bills, Colts, Steelers, and Chiefs as the real legitimate threats in the AFC. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
All right.
There we go.
Let's go to the NFC. Just got a couple of teams here. The Arizona Cardinals, do they have a chance at appearing in Super Bowl 55, or are they done?
Done.
All right. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady's crew.
I'm going to keep them alive, but I'm going to put an asterisk by them, just like Watergate or Deflategate. I'm going to put an asterisk by them because I just don't know if Tom can turn it around, but I'm not going to completely rule them out.
All right, what about the Chicago Bears?
Done. Don't
even know. Okay, finally. And we're going to put them all in one. Anybody from the NFC East, are they all done?
Super Bowl, they're all done.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I assume so as well. So just by our guess, what about a team like the Rams? You got like the Rams?
I'm bullish on them. I like the Rams. I think the Rams are the team that emerges.
I actually didn't even put them on the list because I think that they are such a Super Bowl threat. So that is fair enough. Field goal is good for Washington. They are up on the Cowboys now, 20-13. Dallas has the ball back. So there you go. You had a little seconds of some Brooks and Dunn. He's Bucky Brooks. Get him on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. It's a huge, huge weekend for Bucky. We'll talk about what could go down tomorrow in college football next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
A Thanksgiving Day edition. Bucky Brooks and I are just like family. We get together once a year, hang out for 4 hours, and then do it again next year. It's what we do here on Fox Sports Radio. Get Bucky on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Now, would an early Christmas gift be a Tar Heel win over Notre Dame tomorrow? Would that suffice for all of the holiday spirit if the Tar Heels could pull off the upset over the number two Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
That wouldn't suffice. That would be a part of a bigger Christmas gift. See, because the Christmas gift would be an ACC championship game appearance and win. And so for that to happen, it would be a win over Notre Dame, followed by a win over Miami, then to play Clemson in the championship game. So that would be the bigger Christmas gift.
Sure.
But I would take it as like kind of like leading up, like Christmas Eve where you open up one gift. I would take it.
Yeah. I want a Range Rover for Christmas, but I know that's not coming. So I think the same could be said for your North Carolina hopes. I would just take the Notre Dame win if it happens and be happy, Bucky. That's the way it goes. It's funny because when we had Paul Burmeister on, the radio voice of Notre Dame, who Bucky worked with years ago at the NFL Network, when we had him on, it's the talk of the ACC schedule for Notre Dame being beneficial. But I also think that there's some normalcy to it. Not that these other ACC schools aren't up for Notre Dame, because they always are. Just like in the Big Ten, when Ohio State comes to town, when they're playing Ohio State, it's always a big deal. But I do think that there's a little bit more normalcy for Notre Dame. I don't think that they had North Carolina circled on their schedule like UNC probably did for the Fighting Irish. But still, expecting a good game tomorrow and expecting an entertaining game and not necessarily, you know, knowing the outcome. But I find it intriguing because the Notre Dame and the ACC thing does seem a little bit more normal. And I wonder if there's success for this year, if Notre Dame then will look, you know, more towards being like, all right, are we still going to do this 5-game business, or is this something that we really want to move towards in the future?
I think what helps them this year, it works. And if they do go on and advance to the championship game, if they're able to win a championship game, I do think they'll see value in it. Their basketball team and their other teams already play in the ACC. Mm-hmm. So they understand what being in the conference means. But because the football team has been so powerful, because it's an established brand, I understand. I mean, I understand why they love their independent status. But, from the ACC standpoint, you would love to see the Notre Dame edition because it gives you more currency. It gives you a chance to be in the college football playoff because they're good, Clemson good. It increases your odds. So, yeah, for the ACC standpoint, I can see why make a push. Notre Dame just has to see what the benefit is.
Yeah, any league would love to have Notre Dame. The ACC obviously, you know, has them somewhat. They're dating. They aren't fully committed, but at least they are going steady this season. Where does this rank in big North Carolina football games?
I mean, it's a big game because they're a top five team. I mean, so it's a huge
game. But it's
game.
Notre Dame. I mean, no offense. I mean, I know like if.
Yeah, but they played Notre Dame before. Like that's not the thing. They played Notre Dame two or three times in the last 5 years. So it's not big because, it's Notre Dame coming to town. It's big because of Notre Dame is a top three team. And Carolina feels like this is a team that is on the verge of popping out and kind of joining the ranks of the top teams in the country. And so not the elite teams, but let's talk about being a top 15 team year after year after year. So that's why it's big.
I think when you have the numbers in front of those schools and when the Goliath is coming to your – I mean, this would be completely different if the game was in South Bend as well, just because it just would be. And I know that, you know
– Oh, yeah, yeah. It would be. You're right, because it's a home game. Now, if it was like – normal conditions and not a pandemic, it absolutely would be huge, right? Because it would be a packed house and everything and all of the splendor, but it's not. But it's still a big game. Not the biggest game that's ever been played.
All right. Get Bucky on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. You can find me at Dan Beyer on Fox. A happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Bucky, this was fun. We'll have to do it again in 2021. How about that?
How about that, man? Let's do it.
I want to say thanks to David Gascon at the news desk. A happy Thanksgiving to Dave. A happy Thanksgiving to Vincent Close, our executive producer. A happy Thanksgiving to John Ramos. And to all of you out there for spending it with us. Be safe, everyone.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.